In our breakout and best-selling book, Looking for Angels, A Guide to Understanding and Connecting with Angels, Dr. Scott Guerin and I share how you can communicate with angels, understand signs from the universe and these celestial beings, feel at peace knowing you are always connected to Source, and much more. Get your copy today at lookingforangelsbook.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. And now you can even get the audio version narrated by me and Scott through Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. You are listening to A Psychic Story, a podcast that shares behind-the-scenes insights of people who lead supernatural lives among the ordinary. And I'm your host, Nicole Bigley. Join me every Wednesday as I dispel the myths behind magic and lore. Welcome to A Psychic Story. Mysticism. Our guest for this episode of A Psychic Story is a New York Times best-selling author, wellness coach, and cancer thriver. You may know her as one of Oprah's Super Soul 100, recognizing the most influential thought leaders, or as the subject and director of the documentary Crazy Sexy Cancer. Her latest book, I'm Not a Morning Person, Braving Loss, Grief, and the Big Messy Emotions That Happen When Life Falls Apart, shares what to expect when you're not expecting your world to fall apart. This is the story of Chris Carr. Welcome to A Psychic Story, Chris.
Hi, Nicole. So good to be here.
Well, I was mentioning before I hit record, I'm a big fan. I have all your cookbooks. I spent many hours in the kitchen with your direction and being inspired over the years. So when I saw that you had a new book out, I'm Not a Morning Person, I definitely read it, wanted to just, you know, dive in really deep because it gives readers so many tips and strategies to move forward and really start living life after they've experienced a loss or even processing all that is when it comes with that. But for people who may not be familiar with either you or your book specifically, do you mind sharing a little bit about yourself and then also how this book came to be?
Absolutely. So I stumbled on the wellness world when my life fell apart. 21 years ago, I was diagnosed with an incurable stage 4 cancer with no cure, no treatment. And the first doctor I spoke to suggested a triple organ transplant. The next doctor gave me 10 years to live. And I have been living with stage 4 cancer for 21 years now. I have a very rare disease that can be slow growing and it can be aggressive and it can change. So with all of that, when I finally found the doctor that would become what I call my second in command, because you realize you have to become the CEO of your health, you have to learn how to navigate the system and build your own wellness plan in many ways. When I found him and he said, let's do nothing, let's watch and wait and let cancer make the first move, I thought, how am I going to do that? How am I going to live with the knowledge of cancer, even if it stays quiet, you know, if God willing it is quiet, how am I going to do that? And so I went on this deep wellness journey to first and foremost understand how to take care of myself, but also how to live with chronic stress and chronic fear and feeling very isolated at the time. And so a big part of what I do is help people put together a wellness plan that really supports them in what I call fully alive living, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be perfect on paper. I am not perfect on paper, but I am thriving with disease. And so I think it's possible for each and every one of us to learn to become empowered participants in our health and well-being so that we can thrive in whatever way that looks like for us. And so I had definitely experienced grief. For me, it was the grief of my former sense of self, the grief of living with a chronic condition, the grief of choices that I would have to make along the way. But I hadn't really come to terms with my grief. I didn't actually know how much of it I had or how aspects of it were kind of influencing my life. And each and every one of us are going to have many moments throughout the course of our lives when we feel the rug has been pulled out from under us, you know, the shizzle hits the fan. And in that moment, like you think potentially, how am I ever going to survive this? How am I ever going to get through this? Will life ever look the same? And when we're in that place, we don't even think that thriving would be possible. But again, I didn't really know the extent of it until my chosen father, who adopted me, was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and then ended up dying. And that is when I realized just how much there was to process and to heal, not only with his loss, but these other pieces of my own heart that had kind of gone missing. And I think we live in a grief-phobic, messy, emotions-averse society. So few of us come to the table with these tools, but each and every one of us, as I said, are going to need them at some point. And so my intention with this book is to normalize it and to kind of gather us together to say, here's what we can do now.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing that, because you've had a lot of those experiences throughout your own journey in health. And I think also sometimes we take for granted our health and when certain things are going well for us. And then when the shizzle hits the fan, as you mentioned, and we're just kind of thrown for a loop, we don't necessarily know how to process or approach those emotions that come up within us. And it could be something related to our health, the loss of a loved one, a job, a divorce, whatever. There's all these big moments in life that, you know, I feel like not all of us are equipped to address it or go through it. And you write about that's part of it, is going through the emotion and experiencing it in order to get to the other side. And what made me think about it was Dante's Inferno, when you go down and he gets to the depths of hell and they say, go further, go through it. And he's like, I'm at the very bottom. What do you mean go through it? And it isn't until you actually, it's not the steps, it's the process of going through it. So do you mind maybe sharing with people, you know, when you talk about that in the book, what does going through it mean? Like, how do you actually embrace it and work through it?
Well, there are a lot of ways, and each chapter in the book is designed to address a certain experience or feeling that you may have as you're going through the inferno. It's really perfect. What I have realized is a friend of mine said something really funny to me. She said, you know, I don't want to do this work. I know I have to do this work.
And none of us ever want to do it.
She was talking about her elder. We don't want to do the work, right? But we actually don't understand, I think many of us don't understand, that it's the pain isn't as painful as the fear of the pain and that resistance. And if we think about it, think about like holding back an ocean. You can't do it, but let's say that we could. Let's say you put your hands out and the waves start to hit and then they're stacking and stacking and stacking, and you know, you're pushing and pushing, and the amount of energy and time and exhaustion that you feel as you're holding back the ocean of feelings, that what would happen if we just let go and surfed those waves? You know, for a moment, it's going to feel a little scary. You're going to hold your breath, you'll dive under, the waves will crash over you, but they always recede, they pass and they come back and they ebb and they flow. And that is the mechanism of our healing, of our growth. And so I think, going back to what my girlfriend was saying, is like, I'll do this work if there's some way I can prevent having those big feelings in the future. Like, is there a prevention plan for grief and trauma and anxiety and fear and those big, messy emotions that hold me back? Is there prevention? Mm-hmm. If I do it now, will it prevent me feeling it worse later? And I was like, unfortunately, that's not how it works.
Yeah. We wish.
We wish. It would be amazing if there was that quick fix or that surefire, pill that I could take that would prevent me ever feeling these emotions. But we know that that's not true. And when we go back to this idea of the way out is through, is we're going to feel it, but we're going to continue to move through it. And each time we're moving through it, we may feel a little less of it. We may actually feel more so the gratitude that we have had for the experiences in our lives, the gratitude that we have for experiencing something like love, because love is the opposite of grief. You can't have one without the other. And the more you love, the more you're going to grieve. if we say, I don't want grief ever, then we'll say, okay, that means you're saying I'm saying no to love. And so there isn't a timeline on this. There isn't a finish line. There isn't a special bow at the end. And yet the journey of love is so worth it. And the journey back home to ourselves is the whole reason why we're here in the first place. I often say that we can't amputate any of our emotions and expect to be whole. And wholeness is the goal, right? We want to feel whole and happy and content and peaceful in our bodies and in our lives for the time that we have the opportunity to be here. It's never going to be perfect. We're going to have setbacks and comebacks. I think if we expect that life will only look a certain way, we're going to get radically disappointed when it looks very different. But both of those are how we make a full life.
Yes. I wrote that down too, because I've heard you say that before, that we can't amputate our emotions and expect to be whole because wholeness is the goal. And so I was thinking about that. And when I have people come to me, or I'm, you know, even in my own work, the way that I went through on a spiritual wellness journey was a lot of anxiety, stress that I was experiencing. So when people are listening and say, well, what do you mean through? If I can't hold up the ocean with my hands, what do you mean? Like, what is that step through? And, you know, it could be different for every single person. But what I found the way through was what you were saying, which is be and sit with those emotions, experience those emotions, allow that wave or those experiences to happen with you, because you, and not be in judgment of those experiences or emotions that you have. And through that, that in my opinion is the transmutation, the healing that we have. Sometimes then that simple act allows it to be released. Other times it's about calling in or trying to pull in those memories of unconditional love in the moments we've had with our loved ones, or a time when we felt at peace. And through that, we change and we shift our vibration. We're changing our perspective, and that allows us to hold more space of that wholeness, of that emotion, that or that frequency really, that what we want to experience more of.
I love that. It's so spot on and so true. And I love how practical you are, and you just get right into
trying. It. Trying for folks.
No, you're doing a really good job, really, because it is the question. How do I do that? How do I do that? I'll add to what you just shared, which is, again, so beautiful. Let's go down to the most practical, like what's the first step? Because many of us are not familiar with the landscape of our emotions. I think a big part of this book is an attempt to teach a little more emotional literacy, so that you can actually say, oh, what I'm feeling right now is grief. What I'm feeling right now is anxiety. What I'm feeling right now is fear. And there's a difference between the two. So even being able to name our emotions, because if we can't name them, we can't go to the next step, which is tending to them. And so I have an exercise in the book that's an acting teacher of mine taught me a million years ago in a different lifetime. And it's called calling conditions, where you literally, if as an actor, your emotions, your personality, your heart is your instrument. And what we would do to warm up is we'd stand up, and for about a minute, we would just call all of the different feelings that we could identify: hungry, sad, frustrated, tired, right? You're just keying in to, this is the instrument. This is what I'm feeling right now in this moment, so that I can start to use those tools. I think it's the same thing. Calling conditions we can do as human beings to just understand our emotions and how we are in this very present moment. And so starting from that place of, oh, my awareness is I am feeling very sad. Great, beautiful. The fact that you could even say it, because a lot of times people will tell me, but I don't know how I feel. You're still feeling something. That then what I say is, let's slow it all down so we can identify it. Oh my gosh, underneath it, I didn't know what I was feeling was anger. I am so angry. Great. So now we can identify what the emotion is. And then for me, the next step is, when I was newly diagnosed, I live with stage 4 cancer, as I say, and I have tumors in my lungs and my liver. And I thought, well, what if I get to know my lungs and my liver a little bit more? What if I understand a little bit more about how they work and what they like, what they don't like, so that I can actually take care of them? that's exactly what I started to do. And what other parts of my body are struggling that might have anything to do with my immune system, for example? I had a lot of gut health issues. So I thought, well, maybe I can't cure cancer, but I sure can help my gut. And my gut helps my entire body, especially my immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So if we take that same premise and we say our emotional organ system is the same, our mental health is as valuable as our physical health. And we're all just starting to catch on to that now. And we say, okay, if I can identify the emotions that I'm experiencing, especially the ones that are holding me back, and I know I feel stuck somehow, but I just can't seem to uncover it. If I can start to identify, let's say that is anger, then I can learn more about how anger works, just like how I learn how my liver, my toe, my eyeball works, so that I can do what? I can tend to it. Mm-hmm. Because our emotions are information, as you so beautifully said, and our emotions are energy. Energy needs to move, right? Information is there for a reason. So this is the most practical and basic way to not only look at this, but I think inspire each and every one of us to start to approach these harder topics. Because if we make it a little bit more practical and less
scary,
mystical, scary. Where you're just like, I don't know. It's
overwhelming.
It's so painful. I can't
don't
even
know where
get
to start.
Near it.
What to do?
Mm-hmm. Then maybe we're more likely, maybe we're more willing to have this conversation first and foremost with ourselves.
Well, what I was thinking, and I love all that. Thank you for sharing. It's a very practical approach too for people to start to think about it. Yeah, it can be hard to say, like, how am I feeling? And one of the things I always recommend to people is start your day with, how am I feeling? How am I feeling emotionally? How am I feeling physically? How am I feeling mentally? How am I feeling spiritually? You may not know every single answer to all of that, but it gets you into that practice of having a baseline and a benchmark to then decide throughout the day what you need to do, maybe what you need to address. Maybe you don't do anything, but at least it's information that you have. But also when you were talking intuitively, what I was seeing in my mind's eye is we're on autopilot. We hit the ground running and we do and we go throughout the day. And we're not necessarily realizing that underneath that current and underneath everything we're doing, there's something there, whether it's the emotional part of it and who we are and how we're showing up, whether it's that mental aspect. And so this gives you that level of awareness and what you're saying about being even just familiar with who we are and those aspects of ourselves and emotions.
Yeah, beautiful. It's like identifying when there's a disturbance in the force.
Exactly. Exactly. So one of the other things that you write about is, and this kind of leads into the next question, is how those emotions, in particular anger or other things, are a signal. And anger in particular is like a fight response to like grief. So, you know, and it's also, which I believe too, an instinctive response to a perceived threat, whether it's real or not, because we have our amygdala and sometimes there are perceived threats that aren't real, but then actual things that obviously are. Once we recognize that, outside of what you just said about noticing it and kind of moving through it, what are some other ways that people can, I guess, work through those varying emotions? And I know you write out in your book specific ones, but is there anything else that you want to share or ways practically that people can approach this?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I would be remiss if I didn't start with support, because especially with the big emotions and the big stuff that we might be dealing with, it's much more helpful to do it in the context of a therapeutic setting or a support group, or even, you know, your true blue who's really there for you so that you have somebody to process with. I remember when I talk about my therapist, Carol, a lot in the book and some of her great sayings. And one of them, which stuck with me in such a big way, was when the grief train pulls into the station, it brings all the cars.
Every single one.
All of them that you thought you were over, or you thought you had processed, you thought it didn't hold the same sort of spark, and yet it does. And but it also brings its cousins, you know, that are rowdy and big. And I joke in the book, they demand, you know, bottle service at the club. You know, these are the big guns, like anger and jealousy and all these types of emotions that I was actually quite surprised would come on as strong as they did when I was in the middle of yet another big storm in my life. And so specifically with anger, I love how you shared that. It is often talked about as a signaling emotion, as your emotional intelligence guiding you to, hey, there's something more here. There's something more that you need to look at here. And yet we vilify anger, especially in our society and culture for women. The title of that chapter is Becoming Unbecoming, because it was something my grandmother used to say. And she came from a different time. And my grandmother was an incredible woman, but she would teach me that certain emotions were unbecoming for women. And at the top of her list was grief and anger. So I did a lot of well-intentioned work for a lot of years to push those emotions aside, down. I'd hustle harder. I'd work longer. I'd avoid better. I'd use coping mechanisms like drug and food and alcohol and all the types of things so as not to not only feel those feelings, but God forbid, let them leak out into the world so anybody else knew that I had them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what we know is, again, going back to the idea of wholeness, that's not going to work. Because if emotions are energy, they're going to come out one way or the other. And if they come out the front door, it's probably going to be a lot healthier. It's going to help you grow. It's going to teach you more about yourself. You might not like it, but you know what I mean? This is part of being human. When it comes out the back door, it's usually pretty messy. And that's when, you know, life goes in directions that maybe we could have avoided if we had more tools. So specifically with anger, I think what's so amazing about it is if you think about an iceberg, and this is from the Gottman Institute, you know, the tip of the iceberg looks so big, but actually the main portion of the iceberg is under the surface. So anger is usually signaling not just threat, but it might be signaling something else that's under the surface. Anger might be your protector emotion that's coming out strong to keep you safe, that fight flight response. But what is it trying to keep you safe from is the question. Now, there are some very basic and practical things that might be actually keeping you safe in this moment where there is a real threat and you need to act. But that threat could also be that it's kicking up an old trauma. It's kicking up something from your past that's unresolved. It's kicking up a part of yourself that is deeply wounded and needs care. Mm-hmm. And anger is there to protect that part. So you can say, thank you, anger, for showing me that there's so much more under the surface. And then when I dial into what that is, it might be a river of shame. And anger was there to protect me from that feeling. So to me, it gets a little fun. You know, you're like, okay,
this is fun
this
for
is
you.
This is the
all
heart
right.
of the Tootsie Pop. Yeah. Well, you know, I think growth is fun. It's not always, the process isn't necessarily always pleasant, but the promise and the reward that we get is to be more in relationship with ourselves, which I think is probably the number one relationship we have in this life, is the relation with self. And to actually walk around saying, I like me. I like the person that I am, even the faults, even the stuff that I'm working on. Like, I really like my own company, because people will come and people will go and people will die and we will die. And this opportunity to enjoy our own company while we're here is so precious. And so what are the barriers standing in our way of enjoying our own company? Mm-hmm. That's really the heart of it for me.
There's a beauty in being uncomfortable with the uncomfortable, because that means you're living, that means you're growing, that means you're healing, that means you're moving forward, all the things. And when we are static sometimes, yes, we do need those periods of rest or reset and reflection. But ultimately what you're talking about, and that's where you say it's fun, is because then you know if it's signaling something and then there might be deeper work or something that you need to move through, then that is, there's a way through. There is a healing through this. I don't have to necessarily deal with all of the other stuff before and stuff it down and not tend to it, because it's giving us the opportunity, whether we like it or not, the opportunity to heal and grow.
Yeah. And that is honestly what emotional freedom looks like.
Love it.
And it doesn't mean that the pain doesn't pop up from time to time. It just doesn't hold you the way it did. It doesn't hold you hostage the way it did, potentially for some of us. And so going back to your practicality, which I love about you, one of the things that is also helpful for people like, I don't know how to move through it, is sometimes we cannot always solve the problems of our mind with our mind. Right. And that's when other healing modalities can come in, like EMDR, working with an energy healer. But mostly all of that leads back to one thing, getting in your body, right? So oftentimes we need to change the channel. Have you ever seen a dog with a hot spot?
Yes, unfortunately.
To me, that is like what anxiety is. Yeah. When they're just licking because there's something. And then it becomes this habitual rumination, this like addiction to lick. This is how the human brain works as well. And so what do you do in that moment? Like you have to change the channel. Okay, I'm going to get the tennis ball. Like obviously you need to tend to whatever is going on. But sometimes if it's a compulsion, I'm going to change the channel. I'm going to break it with activity. I'm going to take that dog for a walk. Sometimes you need to take the dog that is you for a walk.
Yes, absolutely.
Sometimes you need to throw the dog that is you a tennis ball. And it could literally be a big part of me getting through, you know, some of the diciest, most painful times throughout my journey with cancer and certainly through the journey of losing someone so dear to me. I turned to movement. And I'm not talking about like going to the HIIT class. It could literally be like, all I can do is hike. All I can do is hike. All I can do is walk. I can only walk in the woods. That is what I got today. Or I find myself in a spiral saying, okay, there's nothing I can solve right now by talking about it, by even journaling it out. This is still not doing it for me. And that is a very powerful activity. It's definitely one of the top things that I recommend is starting your day with writing and processing and connecting with how you're feeling, but also getting back into your body. Moving that energy out in whatever way feels good to you. It could be dancing full out to your favorite song that also makes you cry and laugh. And, you know, my friend Regina Thomashower, who's Mama Gina, she runs Mama Gina's School of Womanly Arts. She does this thing called swamping, you know, where you're just like dancing and crying and howling. Right? Because you're moving that energy out of your body, literally, which is very different from talk therapy. So there's a place for all of this stuff.
Yeah. And I always usually say to people too is try something and then maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, or maybe it was working for a while and then it's not. And that is your signal or your indication of maybe I should try something differently or add something else to my repertoire. Because, you know, I think about the example a lot of working out. If we hit certain reps and we're running to a certain extent for so long, we do hit plateaus. And that happens as well when we're looking at things emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually. We need to add those additional tools and resources to our, you know, to our arsenal. And like you said in the very beginning, there's ways of support and tools for that support for us. I'd love to pivot a little bit. You write about what I would call like an angel story with roses in your book. And I'd love for you to share with listeners what that was like, because we talk a lot of about that on The Psychic Story. We even have a call-in option and episode for people to share their stories. But what was that like? Because you seem very practical as well. And your wellness and spiritual journey evolved over time. So with your chosen father and his transition over, what was that experience and what was it like?
So that story specifically, a few days after he passed he passed on February 11th, and both my mother and I were there in the room, and it was a very powerful experience, and it was beautiful and it was painful. And my mother was incredible. She was coaching him through the experience of you're doing such a good job, and, you know, just encouraging him that it's okay and that we're going to be okay. And she's holding his heart and I'm holding his hand and I'm just trying to hold it together, because seeing my mom coach him it was so powerful. And then as he passed, I remember this moment before he passed, it looked like he was taking a leap. It almost imagined if you were on a rock, a big rock, and you were jumping into a lake. And it's like that moment of excitement, but also fear of the unknown, of like, okay, one, two, three.
This hesitation or this excitement.
It was both. Mm-hmm. It was. And look, I'm projecting right now, but that is definitely what it felt like. And this a combination of, again, fear and excitement. And then this really big smile came across his face. And that's when we knew he was gone. And it was the most beautiful smile I'd ever seen in my life. And so it opened me. It opened my heart cracked it wide open, quite honestly, as somebody who tends to be more scientific and practical and prove it to me. And then a couple days later, it was Valentine's Day, which is my cancerversary. I was diagnosed on Valentine's Day. And my mother and I were in Florida right now. We decided to go for a walk on the beach. Earlier that day, my husband had gotten me roses. My dad used to get me roses and my mom roses. He would always say, "How's my Valentine today? You're always going to be my Valentine," especially because of my cancerversary. And so my husband said, should I get your mom roses? Is that weird? Is that going to be painful for her? I don't know what to do. And he was really agonizing about the decision. And I said, look, if it's so hard, they're not for you to give probably. So don't worry about it. It's okay. So we go for a walk on the beach and we walk beyond all of the people sitting in their chairs. It's a long walk. And out in the distance, I see something in the sand. I'm like, what is that? It's like these just little red things. And we keep walking. We get closer and closer to it. And it's two roses standing at attention in the sand.
Oh, getting chills. I mean, I read it, but even just hearing you say it, it's so beautiful.
I was like, Mom, look. And I took pictures of her standing over the roses and she took pictures of me sitting with the roses. And we took the roses and we got back to the car and we're in the parking lot and there's a little apartment complex in the parking lot. And I see this man getting ready. He's got a big screen TV and I can see his TV and I see his Lazy Boy and he's getting ready. He's hunkering down. I see Netflix, the Netflix logo. And I'm looking like, what's this guy going to want? And it says, Surviving Death.
Oh my goodness.
Right? It's the Netflix documentary. And I was just like, you know, got it. I definitely call on my dad and have gotten a lot of great wisdom from him. And so it's been beautiful to kind of open my heart to what's outside of what my normal vision can, my human vision can see. And to still feel his presence and to even understand that energy doesn't die. I mean, this we know to be true. It just changes. It changes form. And he used to be the person that I would go to for all of the, a lot of advice, but especially business advice. And most recently, maybe about 6 months ago, I decided that I would continue to go to that, to him for advice. But this time I was going to put him in charge of HR and hiring.
From the other side, no better guide for that. Yeah.
Yep. And I have to say, we have hired 3 new people and they're all spectacular. And I just keep saying, you're doing a really good job at HR, Dad.
Yeah. No, we say so many important things. And that is that one, just even opening, keeping that door open and having that door open for the conversation and the communication, even if we don't necessarily understand what those signs are or how it's going to come through to us, is huge. And then again, keeping the conversation, and you said you feel his presence and you're also in gratitude of thanking him for that, which in my opinion really heightens that signal and our intuitive muscle to be able to continue to connect with our loved ones. So I love how he's just still supporting you from the other side, part of your spirit team and all that, and that he was able to open your heart, like you so eloquently said, because, you know, those are those moments too, to show us the transition with death and birth even, and how we can have our loved ones support us.
Yeah, it's so powerful. I love that you brought that up because I think it's a part of our society where we're so afraid of grief. Because if you think about it, when a baby comes, there's so much. There's the parties, there's the excitement, there's the showers, there's the gifts, there's the support, there's the help. The celebration of new life. And when it comes to the transition of life, a equally monumental moment. First of all, it requires the same amount of support, help, stuff, planning, logistics. It is huge. It's a full-time job. And none of us are prepared for it. And none of us will talk about it. And so this incredible period, this rite of passage happens and we're all traumatized by it. We're in shock. We're running around not knowing what to do, completely incapable. Not everybody, but a good portion of us are. And so just can you imagine what would happen if we could normalize the full experience of life and set people up from birth until passing. And doesn't mean we're not going to have heartbreak, because we want to have our person in physical form like we've always had. So there will be heartbreak, there will be pain. But to your point, how can we continue the relationship, but how can we also prepare ourselves for the very clear logistical needs that need to take place during the transition to support the loved one and the family?
Yeah. I spoke with Kim Coella. She's what she calls herself, a spirit doula. So people may be familiar with death doula, but a spirit doula, she helps with birth and the transition through life and the exit rather. But she talks about that, about having these moments of joy and conversations with your loved ones when they're still here, and having that be more, it's not always fun necessarily, but she's like, I learned so much about my husband that I didn't know. I, you know, instead of waiting to the last minute of picking songs for him or these sorts of things, I would have never picked out some of the songs he picked. But there's ways that you can prepare. And to your point about we avoid it, one, because we just think it's not inevitable and it's not going to happen. And so when it's upon us, it's about, what do we do now? What does that look like? And so if we can prepare in ways together, I think that that helps tremendously the process of when we do exit and have that transition. You mentioned earlier fight, flight, and freeze, but you also have another thing called WTF. As far as like your steps, like when we go through those emotions, I don't know if you want to share anything about that, but I had to chuckle and laugh about that because yeah, there's like the you know, our reaction to emotions about fight, flight, and freezing. And then WTF, what is WTF to you when it comes to dealing with our emotions?
I really love to lace humor in throughout the book.
And I love that because that was very helpful. Thank you.
Well, I feel like humor makes medicine go down. And so we're talking about really deep things and on things that maybe people are like, oh, well, yeah, I'll get that book someday when I need it. And I'm here to tell you, you need it today. Because we don't see all of the various tentacles and the ways that some of these big emotions can impact our lives and our ability to live fully. So if living fully is part of what you want this time around, then this is the deep work that we need to do. It's easy to say, like, I just want to focus on manifesting. And that's great. I love manifesting as well. It's very helpful. But this is sort of like, you know, how sometimes you got to eat your peas before you have the cherry.
Uh-huh. Yep.
This is the work. So WTF is just my way of lightening the moment, because that's certainly what it feels like when we're going through the big stuff and our bodies are in that fight, flight, freeze. What that mm-hmm. is happening to me right now? What do I do next? I want to say that going back to this idea of humor and joy and levity, when we're going through difficult times, I often hear people say, like, the last thing that I can experience right now is joy. But joy is the medicine. Joy is the antidote to stress. And a lot of what we're going through is stress, and even the stress of the unknown, the stress of what's to come. I talk about anticipatory grief in the book, which is you may be grieving before the actual loss, because oftentimes that happens. You know, the loss of the job, the loss of the relationship, the loss of the child who's about to go off to college. And you're in anticipatory grief because you're starting to count down the months where your kid is still in your home. And you don't understand how that's impacting you in your relationship. But when I was in the heart of it, prioritizing joy became something that was part of my survival. And that joy wasn't like, oh, I'm the happiest I'll ever be. I can't even believe this. Sometimes I would feel bad. Like, am I even allowed to feel joy right now? I felt guilty for feeling moments of joy because my dad wasn't here to experience joy in physical form, right? So how dare I have joy? But overriding those ideas was very important to me. The joy of feeding my birds. Having a moment to go outside and feed my birds gives me an enormous amount of joy. It's all of those little moments that we string together that start to tend to our hearts and to help us feel like we're not under the surface. We're actually able to surf those waves as opposed to letting them take us under. So fight for your joy if you're going through a difficult time, and understand its power, its medicinal qualities, how it supports your overall chemistry, how it supports your immunity, your well-being, your longevity. Joy is essential, not only for a well-lived life, but for life in and of itself.
What a beautiful, beautiful message. And it also applies too to the example you're giving with the dog in the hot spot, that antidote. It may be movement, it may be, you know, an emotion like joy or that love, but you bringing that into the fold is what helps, again, that process and through it. So thank you so much for sharing. Is there anything that we didn't have a chance to get to in our conversation that you would love to share with the listeners, whether it's about your book, your journey, or any tidbits of information you'd like to pass on?
Yeah, I'll give you one more because I think this one's so powerful and I'm still living into this and trying to let this nugget be my compass for a well-lived life. As my dad's journey was coming to an end in physical form, and I tell lots of stories throughout the book because I feel like our stories bring us closer together. They show us that we're more connected than we think and we have more in common than we think. So lots of stories in the book that I use as teaching vehicles. But as his time was coming closer to an end and his fatherly advice was, you know, increasing, it's almost like, get a little bit more wisdom in here before I leave. Remember when you got to change the oil. Remember when you need to trade the car in. Remember when you need to do this, that, and the other thing. He said to me, and we were celebrating his birthday, it would be one of his last birthdays, and we were in Martha's Vineyard. And it's a beautiful place. And he had his own business. He was in construction. He paved roads. But the summer was always his busiest season. And so oftentimes he wouldn't give himself a summer break. We never went on a summer vacation, right? Because that's when dad was working so hard. And he said, I wish I had given myself more moments like this along the way. We work so hard and we put off the good stuff for later when we've got our ducks in our row, when the kids are off to school, when the big project is done, when we're out of debt, when then I'll do the thing that I wanted to do. And he said, you got to make your golden moments now. Like, make life golden. And those golden moments are what we're talking about when we talk about weaving in joy. The golden years are not always promised to each and every one of us, but we can have those golden years in the moment. We can have little golden moments throughout the course of our day that, again, come together to create a well-lived life. And so anybody listening out there, what is your golden moment that you can bring into fruition, into embodiment today? What is one golden moment that you could make sure is laced into this day?
I love that. And we are going to end with that because it's such a beautiful, beautiful message from not just yourself, but from your father and your chosen father from the other side. So thank you, Chris, for being on. For people to reach out to you to find more, where would you like them to go?
Well, I am at chriscarr.com. You can find me at crazysexychris on Instagram. My book is I'm Not a Morning Person, and it is available everywhere books are sold.
Amazing. Well, I will be sure to include all of that in the show notes as always for people if they want to just click those links. And I appreciate you coming on, Chris. I feel like hopefully this is one of many conversations to come with you. And thank you also for just sharing your story. Because like you said, sharing our stories and allowing people to hear them is how we relate, how we connect, how we form and build community. So thank you so much for being brave and sharing.
Thanks for having me, Nicole. I really appreciate you and the work you're doing.
Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and join the conversation on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. All episodes are free on your favorite podcast player or at apsychicstory.com. Have a question? Is there a topic you'd like to hear more about? Or have a suggestion for a future guest? Send an email to contact@apsychicstory.com or leave a voicemail message at 1-800-880-1881. We'd love to hear from you and you may even be featured on a future episode. If you're interested in booking a session with me, you can do that directly on the website. And if you want to hear even more content hosted by yours truly, check out my other show, Supernatural Matters. Reminder that you are automatically entered to win either a free 20-minute intuitive or energy healing session with me if you leave 5 stars along with a positive review. Currently, reviews can be left on Apple, Stitcher, Podchaser, or CastBox podcast players. Don't forget to email contact@apsychicstory.com when you do, because it allows me to get in touch with you if your name is pulled in the drawing. Your name stays in until you win.